Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in. It's Tuesday night, so you know what that means. It's V2V podcast time. I'm your host, Dr. Marcy, America's voice for the voiceless. And just as you all may know, the month of April has been Men's Month, and so it's been dedicated each week to hearing the voices of our brothers on a number of various different topics. But in case this is your first time tuning in, I want to ensure you that this is a safe space to bring your whole authentic self to. And every week when we get together, we discuss a variety of critical life topics. Tonight's subject is extremely important and one that I feel necessary, a conversation I feel necessary for us to have. As always, you can count on some transparent dialogue, and sometimes it can get a little bit uncomfortable. But it's always my sincerest wish that what's shared here will inspire you to grow through your discomfort. And our intention this evening, as it is each week, is that something that you hear will touch you, to empower you, and encourage you to make sustainable changes in your own life and relationships. And as always, I ask that God use us to have the conversation that you need to hear. I thank him for the voice, the platform, and the opportunity to be a conduit for healing. The phone lines are open. They'll remain open for the duration of the show. So if you have questions or comments, we'd love for you to call in. That number is 914-219-0880. And like I said at the top of the show, April has been Men's Month. And so we've had some great conversations, kicked it off with Coach Clarence, talking about all things wellness. We had an anonymous guest, Mr. Raymond X. He discussed his experiences on both sides of domestic violence, both sides of abuse. And then last week, Mr. Mark Elliott joined us answering the question, what do men really want emotionally and sexually from women? And so that conversation was a good one. And you can find the replays for all of the shows, as well as the replay for tonight's show at 9seconds.org. And just go to the V2V page and you'll see the link there. And so as we close out Men's Month tonight, I wanted us to have an opportunity to hear what the experience is like for men when they experience domestic violence. What happens when he's abused and he's the one who needs help? And so tonight we're going to ask the question, what happens when she is the abuser? And I talked to a lot of men who share this experience, but what I found is that most of them are reluctant to come on air and share their story. But thanks to social media, I was able to find tonight's guest. We kind of found each other. But in any case, after a single conversation with this gentleman, we weren't even talking about domestic violence. We were actually talking about books and writing books. But when I got a glimpse into his story, I knew for sure I wanted him to come on the show. Let me change that. I needed him to come on the show if he was willing and share his story, because it is quite the testimony to what men go through dealing with domestic violence and how they're portrayed in the media, what the perceptions are. So fortunately for us, he said yes. And so we welcome your questions, like I said, live. If you catch us on the replay, you can leave comments. in my inbox. You can go to Facebook to do that, or you can go to 9seconds.org/V2V and leave comments there as well. Either way, I want to hear your take on the conversation that we're going to have tonight. So with that, I welcome you, Michael Valerio. He's an author, entrepreneur, investor, and a financial consultant, and he's brave enough to come on and share his story tonight. So welcome, Michael. How are you?
No, thank you. Glad to be here. I'm doing well.
And you stayed up
I'm
late
excited
tonight.
To,
thank you for that.
I did.
I know it's late on the East Coast.
It's for a good cause,
so
I'm excited. No problem at all.
That is. Thank you. So I'm going to stop talking because I talked a lot opening up the show, and I'm going to kind of turn it over to you and just ask for you to share your story, share your experiences, and then we'll kind of kick off the conversation from there. I know you and I spoke the other day kind of preparing for the show, and I was in awe at your story. So the floor is yours, sir. Please share.
Sure. So it may take a while, and if anybody wants to ask questions or you need to ask me any questions, sure, feel free. But, so this happened. I was in the Navy at the time, and I was about 23. So 23, never really been in love, never had a real relationship at that time. And, I had to have her. You know, she was just this tall, gorgeous woman. I knew that I wanted to, you know, do all the right things. I wanted to be a husband. I wanted to be a father. I wanted to be the savior, the protector, and provide all of these things that, that women fantasize about, at least from my perspective in movies and things like that. And also what played a big role in me wanting to be the best man that I could be was my family's history. There's a lot of women in my family, and growing up and watching, you know, things that happened to them negatively with relationships that they've been in. So it was kind of like a guide for me to do the opposite of everything that I've seen. And so I actually put that into play. And so once I worked up enough courage to, you know, to ask her out, and we started dating, and everything was great. You know, it was just like, fairy tale. Everything was good. It's always good in the beginning, but, you know, we could laugh together. We could crack jokes. We could have a beer. Like, it was just so much stuff we could do that we did together. And, you know, about 3 or 4 months into it, things started taking that turn. And so what happened was she was pregnant, and this was something that I wanted. You know, I bought a ring, and we were engaged, and I was on my way out of the Navy at the time, and I bought a place for us, and, you know, I was doing all the things that I knew was right for to prepare for the family and, you know, to be a husband. And the first signs was jealousy. There was no real reason. I didn't hang out. I didn't club. I didn't do any of these things. But it's normally said when that person that's accusing is usually the one doing, and I didn't see any signs of it yet, but, you know, she was pregnant at this time. And so I just felt like, you know, her hormones and things that she was going through, it's a lot of pressure. She was still in the Navy at the time and trying to figure out what we were going to do, whether she was going to stay in, whether I was going to go back in and figure out how we was going to proceed. And so she was about 20 at the time. So, you know, both young and trying to figure things out. And so as the next month went in, things got a little worse. You know, it went from screaming, yelling, cursing to throwing things until that one time, it started off with a push. It started off with objects being thrown. And then, of course, it increases as you allow it, as I allowed it. It got worse. I'm 6'2". At the time, I probably was about, maybe 195, 200 pounds. And she's a pretty tall woman and physically fit. She's about 5'11". And, it was trying to protect myself. I'd never been in a situation like that. So it was shocking. I didn't know what to do. You know, I've watched movies and TV shows, and, you know, most people that say, oh, if that ever happens to me, I would do X, Y, Z. Yeah, and I was that same one too, until it happened. and then I just didn't know what to do. I knew what I wouldn't do, and that was hit back or, you know, anything that would cause any kind of physical harm to her. But I was stuck because she was pregnant. This is my first child, which ended up finding out it was twins. So that was even worse, or better for that matter. It was worse because it was twins and she was pregnant, and I had to deal with, you know, what she was going through. What a blessing that it was twins. So, you know, I was even more inclined to just deal with it. I'm a man, I could take it. And that's what kind of played in my head. It was like, you know, is she really physically hurting me? Not really, more emotionally than anything. And so it went on and it got worse. And, you know, there's a particular moment where I was sitting at a desk and everything just went black. I didn't even know what was going on. I kind of leaned over and hunched in the chair. And once I started gaining, you know, some type of balance and some type of consciousness, and I looked behind because I couldn't hear anything. I couldn't see. It was like the TV was going out. And she was standing there with a boot, a steel-toed boot in her hand. And then I realized, you know, as the pain is settling in, that she hit me with it. And, you know, I turned around in such shock. I grabbed to go and grab the boot, and we tripped over the coffee table. And this was the very beginning of I knew I had to get out of this situation. And because we tripped over and because of our size, we both landed into a wall, so to speak. Well, I say so to speak, but, you know, like her face hit the wall, my shoulders and arms hit the wall, but it busted her lip. And, you know, how am I going to explain this to the cops? They're not going to believe it. And so I knew this was super danger. Her stomach wasn't really big at that time, so it wasn't a concern. She didn't hit her stomach, but the blood, small amount, but still in all, it was a very scary experience. I called my aunt right away. She booked me a flight. I thought I was out of there. I thought I was saved. And she took my wallet and left the house. I mean, it was just like, I can't get out of this nightmare. And so, you know, as time goes on that particular day, she wants to fix it. I really want it to work. I fall for it. You know, it's just the constant makeup, breakup, the fighting, and it's confusion. It's emotionally confusion. And it's physical, you know, like I said, because of man, I could take it, but it got worse. There's just so many incidents that it was just progressively getting worse. And because of the pregnancy, I tried as much as I could to keep it down. So there's plenty of times where she would just tear up the house and I would leave. And so I even had the state of Virginia file charges against me, and I wasn't even there. So I had to go to court. I had to go to court and defend myself for domestic violence. I've been locked up, I don't know how many times, and most of those times I was the one that called the cops. But again, you know, even with scratches on my face, scratches on my neck, my tank top ripped, they don't believe it. There's a particular time where I called the cops, and I was just so fed up. They left. I was cursing them out. I mean, I was telling them they were going to be back in 10 minutes. Sure enough, the same cops, it was about 7 cop cars, came back. The same ones ended up coming back, and I'm cursing them out, explaining to them, you know, I just called you. You guys don't believe anything that's going on, and now look where we're at. Because she busted up my car window. I couldn't drive to work. And you know what? At the end, they said, we'll take both of you to jail. So what is it you want to do? What can I do?
Wow.
And so it's tough. It's tough for a man to, you know, to make a phone call or to, you know, because at that point it's like they look at my size, they look at me, they look at her, they look at how she looked. You know, she's a good-looking woman. You know, she'll cry. And then as a man, do I continue to call, you know, authorities and feel less of a man? I can't handle it. Or am I a sucker for doing that? So these are all the feelings, especially when the cops come and then they just don't believe it. So it was hard to go through it. So with that, what I was aiming for was the birth of the children. And so I made it through. And as soon as the children were born, I think it lasted probably another 3 months. And then that was it. I was able to actually finally break away. That I didn't escape the madness, but the physical abuse, because we was living in separate homes at the time. And I actually had to get the Navy involved to fully put her out. it was really tough. And of course, at that point now, she's just really aiming to make my life hell. So I have these two children, these two little girls, newborns, single dad at this point. I'm out of the Navy. I'm trying to work. I'm trying to figure it out, trying to go to school. And I have two kids now, and I took care of them from birth. You know, as a single dad, changing them anywhere I went. I went to the store. I cooked. I did everything. I you know, took them to the zoo. I recorded things, did everything like a mom does, but as a dad. And it just was tough, birthdays and things like that. And the most shattering part was 18 months into raising these children, I had took them to meet my aunt in Maryland, and she just was really bent on me doing a DNA test. And I didn't mind because I didn't feel like there was any reason that these children couldn't be mine. Because we lived together and we worked together on the same shift, but there was only one day out of the week where I had duty that I couldn't go home, and she would be home. Well, that one time, that was it. I got a phone call from my aunt one day. I'll tell this story, but one day she was harassing me and I had the children, and she was like, you don't have to do it no more. They're not yours. And so that was it. That was the beginning and the end of me allowing my heart to love really anybody from that point forward. I never had the intention to say, okay, what if they're not mine? It just never crossed my mind. And so, you know, all the physical damage could never prepare for that mental, emotional damage that was done. So the story for that day, that particular day, I had them. I put them down, I took a shower, and I heard some banging on my door. Now, I lived far enough where no one ever really popped up at my house, and she never really did either. Well, I guess she had it in her mind that she was going to try and get her family back because she came over smelling real good, looking real good, and she popped up. So, you know, I rushed out, had a towel on, I opened the door, and she's there. And so I'm like, hey, what can I do for you, you know? So she's like, oh, I want to see the girls. I'm like, well, you can't just show up here unexpected. You know, and that turned into a fight. So I had them in the room, and my mom was over visiting. And so I had the room door closed because, you know, my mother's son is being abused by this woman. Of course, they couldn't really be in the same room together. And so she suspected that I had a woman over, which I've never had a woman with the children. And so she was arguing with me that there was a woman in there. So she kicked the door. And when she did, she saw my mother. So the face that she made was, of course, in total shock. And so she was embarrassed at the same time. And so I grabbed her, and like I said, she's a big woman. So I grabbed her, and I forced her out, kind of embarrassing. My towel fell. I'm outside naked and trying to get this woman out of my house. Of course, the babies are crying because she kicked the door. So it's just total chaos. And so at that moment, my mother was actually on the phone with my aunt. And I'm on a balcony, and I was throwing her shoes off of my balcony because her car is where my balcony was. So she didn't have to come back up to get her shoes. And that's when my aunt told my mom, you know, he doesn't have to do this anymore. You know, the kids ain't his, right? And so I broke down crying and hysterical. And so she took off. And so I took off. I went and chased her. Of course, I've never told this story, but I had my gun with me. Now, it never crossed my mind to harm her, but I never really leave anywhere without my gun. So I get in the car, I go chase her because I had to look in her eyes to find out if it was true. That's all I really wanted. And so, of course, my mother doesn't know that. She sees a hysterical man. She knows what I've been through. Of course, she's calling the cops. And now she lives about 45 minutes from me. I mean, I'm on the highway flying, right? This is just the recipe for disaster. And so about probably 20 minutes of high speed, me trying to catch up to her. I don't know. She was in a rocket ship that night. I don't know how that SUV went that fast, but it did. And so I finally catch up to her. I kind of pull her over, and the tears, I just couldn't stop. I couldn't even barely talk, right? And so I asked her, is it true? I just found out, you know, the DNA results, and she was like, that's impossible, right? And so, you know, I jump back in the car, and I actually end up going to her house. And it was just the craziest thing because I just wanted to be comforted. Even though I knew it was true and all that I had been through, I just needed somebody. And so I just held her that night. I didn't sleep. And she really, it's like she really didn't care. You know, she denied it maybe two more times, but there was no conviction behind it. There was no shock. There was no sorrow for me. There was just like, you know, too bad type of deal. But all of that pain and all of that, it made me strong. It made me really be like, okay, well, if I could handle this, then I can accomplish anything. And so that's really the point of where I turned my life into, I don't want to say turned it around, but I knew what I would never, ever settle for. And I knew the things that I wanted, that I wouldn't let anything get in the way from that point forward. I said a lot. So, you know, I give you guys time to process that.
You did say a lot. And, you know, you shared the story with me the other day, and I was blown away the first time I heard it. And then now tonight you're sharing even more stuff. And what's confusing to me is a lot of things, actually. But how, as a woman, do you attack this man, assault this man, then allow him to raise the children, which aren't even his, and you probably knew that? Like,
I would agree with that.
Like, it's mystifying to me. But so I want to ask something, because this was the part that you said that I wasn't already aware of. So when you were talking about finding out that the kids weren't yours and the whole fiasco, like chasing her down and all that kind of stuff, I mean, that's pure emotion. That's pure adrenaline that's pushing and driving your choices at that point. But you said that you just wanted to be comforted, and you turned to the person that created the pain to relieve the pain. Can you talk about that a little bit? Like, what kind of was going through your mind?
Yeah,
like,
sure. Yeah, I just was so in love with her. You know, I didn't know if it was possible or not to love someone that much, number one. But number two, we've traveled to many countries because we were in the Navy together. And even then, you know, we've been overseas, and, you know, there's beautiful women everywhere. And I never even looked. No one else ever fancied me. And so I knew that I'd never felt this before. And so maybe in that moment and all that pain, I wanted some hope. I felt like maybe even if there was some sorrow there, that there was an opportunity to fix this. I mean, I was even willing. I mean, of course, all that emotion stuff was happening very fast at that time. But I was thinking, man, you know, they only know me. And so if we could fix what we have that's broken, I'll still be there, which, you know, prior to that, I've heard stories. I mean, even songs about, you know, women having other people's children and the man still staying around. And I really thought that Ted Mann was an idiot for that. Life Jennings has a song like that. It's called Hypothetical. And I love that album. And I'm just like, I would never do that. He's an idiot. But I was in that same exact situation. And I was like, you know what? I'll be there for them. And the crazy thing is, there's plenty more drama behind it. You know, as months went on, she separated. I wasn't really getting them as much. And prior to that, she always gave me them because she was hiding who she really was from me. And that was the first thing. There was no real red flags. Her background was a lot of trauma. She came from a mixed family. She came from a poor family. She was either molested or raped in her early age. And so there was all this trauma behind, and hearing these stories, I was like, I'm just going to give you the world. Like, you don't have to worry about that. And that's all I kept thinking was, I can fix someone that's broken. And that's one of the things I've learned. You can't change anybody, and you can't fix them. They have to fix themselves, and they have to get professional help depending on the level of how deep they're broken. But I didn't know that at that age, and I never experienced anything like that. And so I wanted it to work, and I was hoping, I guess, because it was just so much, it was just blurred. It was just, and to be honest, and this is why I left out, I actually slept with her that night because I thought that was going to fix me. And that was tough. I thought it would fix me, and it didn't. And there was nothing there. And that's how I knew that that wouldn't work. It was no passion there at all. But I guess I was hoping for it. And so moving forward, I knew that I had to do what I had to do for the children. And so there was only a couple more times. So here's another quick, crazy story. She was going to jail. So a bit of time after that, it wasn't much longer. I mean, she was just spiraling out of control. In the early months of us dating, there was really no alcohol. Well, she was hiding that she really had an alcohol problem. She was sleeping not only with other men, but she was sleeping with women too. And so, of course, I start peeling these layers back after. And once we broke up, that's when that wildness really came out with the sleeping with men and women and just doing everything. So the 45 days, she was in the Navy. She was beating people up. She was hitting them with bottles. And then the real dad, which was the ex, you know, once we split, she continued to see him. And the same thing was continuing with him, the physical abuse. She was kicking his ass, too. And so the Navy put her restricted. They locked her up. And so when I found out, I said, oh, my, I got to get the kids. Crazy story. She had a babysitter that was handicapped. And it didn't make sense to me because she was in a wheelchair, and nothing against her, but these were newborn babies. And they were just starting to crawl and stuff like that. So I always would say, listen, what if one of these babies crawl, like, under the bed? Like, how would she get them? You know, would she get a broomstick and fish them out? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. But there was a reason behind it. The boyfriend, the real dad, he lived literally two doors down. I had no idea. I was picking these kids up and dropping them off at the babysitter, and he lived right there. And so he recommended her. And this is why it never made sense to me, but I found out later why it happened. And so anyway, so I called them. I found out that she's given the kids to the babysitter. Legally, I'm still the father on paper. I signed the birth certificate. And so I'm like, that can't happen. I'm not leaving them with a stranger. And so I called the babysitter, and she's like, I'm not getting involved. Too bad. She's the one that pays me, and so I listen to her. So, of course, naturally, I can't let that happen. So I called the cops. And I'm telling them what's happening. And so the cop was real cool. He was like, listen, I'm going to tell you what to do. You're going to have to file kidnapping charges. And so I'm with it. Okay, no problem. So I have the birth certificate. I have everything to prove who I am and what and who they are to me, at least on paper. And so I call her up to give her a last chance because I really didn't want to do that. And so, of course, I had to threaten them and let them know this is what I'm going to do if you don't give me my children. And so I did. And it was – the crazy thing is it was raining so bad that day you couldn't really see in front of you. And so I'm standing – I'm outside. The cop shows up. I explain everything to them. This was like they was going to be the mediator to get the children and bring them to me. So I didn't really have to file any kidnapping charges. And so I'm outside. This is crazy. So I'm outside, and 10 minutes go by. And 20 minutes go by, and the rain is not letting up. And this cop is not coming outside. And so I'm really confused of what's going on. And so to make everything just 100 times worse, the kids had to be close to at this time. And so I was dating already, right? And so the girl that I was with, she knew my history. And what happened was I didn't realize what I was doing was I used to talk a lot about the children's mother. And so it would intimidate these women that I was dating because they felt like I would never love them the way I loved her. And I didn't realize the way I talked about her that it was making them feel like that. So I give you that background to say I'm on the phone with her and I'm letting her know, you know, what I'm doing. And not that I didn't have enough stress. She tells me, hey, Mike, listen, I just got to tell you I'm pregnant. And I'm like, geez, oh my God. So I'm standing outside in the rain on the phone with her, waiting for the cops to come with these two kids, and I just started a new job. And I'm like, this can't work. I don't know what to do. I really didn't have anyone to go to help me. And so in my head, in that time, I'm like, well, if I take these kids, I just started this job. I have no babysitter. I have to stay home with them. I'm going to lose this job. This girl that I'm dating is now claiming to be pregnant, which I knew was not true. But it's a small chance, but still, you know. And so I got all this going on, and I left. Mm-hmm. I left, and I never seen them again. I never went back.
Wow. So you never found out what took the police so long to come back?
I never found out, no. I never found to this day. And so there's 16 now. Yeah.
That is
crazy. I don't know.
Wow.
It was meant for them to take that long for me to get out of there.
Yeah, that's strange. I wonder what was going on inside. But, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is all of the information, all the data. I mean, you have to dig deep to find any kind of statistics on domestic violence against men. I think I shared with you, even just to put together the promo materials to talk about tonight's show, I struggled to even find photos of, I mean, you could Google women hitting men and you get pictures of men hitting women. Like, it was crazy to me. And so a lot of the information and a lot of the judgment about domestic violence is placed on women. And then one of the criticisms is, well, why do you go back? Why does she keep going back? Why does she return? And so I think that's why I was interested in how you felt about wanting to be comforted by her. And then, like you said, like we even had sex that night. Well, women are judged for that, right? But this goes to show, and I'm so glad that you shared that it's not about the necessarily even wanting that person, but it's like you said, like, I think I can fix this. And sometimes sex is a tool that we try and use to repair things that are irreparable. And so I find it interesting that as a man, you kind of went down that same road too, like wanting to try and put this back together. Because when people are in abusive relationships, you know, they say that a woman leaves on average 7 times before she stays gone for good. And, you know, there's lots and lots and lots of backlash about that because of the judgment that gets associated with it. And so I'm really, really glad that you shared that and gave that perspective to see that it's not just women who are doing that. It's not just women who are trying to you know, seek solace, seek comfort, whatever, or to try and fix it. And I don't think I've ever heard, a man express that. Like, as many times as I've talked to men about it.
Interesting enough, once I did leave, I never did go back. It never really even crossed my mind. But there was, you know, there was a period of time where I was mentally breaking away. I just needed to be sure what I was suspecting. Now, here's what's interesting. Even through all that abuse and with the children and all of that stuff, what made me leave wasn't the abuse. It was when she cheated. I found out she cheated first before I found out about the children. So I was still there. But once I found out, now I suspected, but in my mind, I've never been a jealous man. And I wasn't jealous, but I didn't want to be the type of person that accused for a few reasons. Number one, I didn't have enough proof. And number two, if it was true and I accused and I couldn't prove it at that time, all I would do was help her to hide it better. And so I wanted her to be comfortable enough around me to do the things that she was continually to do that I was suspecting. And so it's a crazy enough story in itself. When I actually found out, it was a phone call to the house, which no one had this number because cell phones were big at that time, right? I mean, this is 2005. And so, you know, the house phone was just a package with the cable. But, you know, I found out that night because he answered the phone. Well, I answered the phone, and then he answered. So that was it. I told her right then and there. Now, there was no yelling. There was no cursing. There was nothing. I wasn't mad. And she dropped her knees, and she cried, and she begged. And I picked her up, and I said to her, I said, listen, you're young. I'm young. I took blame in this. I said, you know, maybe I forced you to grow up too fast. You know, maybe you're just not ready to be a wife and ready not to be a mother, because it did happen fast. I was ready. But I took partial blame in for her activities and what she was doing, because even now I look at 20-year-olds and I say, it's just too young. It's too young to mm-hmm. jump into marriage. There's just not enough experience. There's so many people out here and so many relationships we should have. I'm not saying that we should all be dots and run around in different beds, but, you know, we should experience dating and doing different things with different people. That I took part responsibility, and I didn't want her to feel low. So I picked her up off that floor, and I talked to her like I'm talking to you now, and I expressed, you know, what the future was going to have for us, and I let her know, like, this is it. You got to leave. You know, I'm going to be there for the kids, but, you know, I can't have that. I can't accept that. And so she left that night, and sure enough, you know, she went and seen him, and she got over it. You know, so it was really just a game, but I was over it at that point. So, interesting enough, it wasn't the physical abuse. It was the cheating that ultimately led me to leave.
Yeah, the parallels to what women, the choices women make and things like that are so similar. And literally, you are the first man that I'm hearing actually express these experiences and to share this side of it. So I'm so grateful for this conversation. We do have a caller, so let me see if the caller is just calling to listen on the line or if they have a question. So give me 1 second to do that.
Hi,
hey,
Dr.
Caller,
Marcy.
Hello?
Hi, Dr. Marcy. Can you hear me?
I can. Dr. Monica, is that you?
This is Dr. Monica. Yes, it is. I just had to. I know I came in a little late, but I had to come in and just commend your guest for speaking up, because what he's talking about are things that, I mean, it's beyond the abuse. And I really hope that maybe some young people are listening and tuning into this, because it goes it's when I was listening to him, I'm thinking of just how we cover up things, our, you know, trying to uphold images, trying to do the right thing. And, you know, one of the things that he said was that he was taking responsibility and somewhat blaming himself. And a lot of us get into unhealthy relationships and blame ourselves instead of putting the blame where it belongs. And mm-hmm. so I just commend him for just speaking up and speaking out about this subject. And I didn't come in early, but my question to him was, what type of advice would you give to young men and young women who are dating? And it's not just young men and women, it's older too. It has no age limit when it comes to abuse, when it comes to deception.
Yeah, I agree with that, and thank you for the kind words. So what helped me in the future after that is I knew what I would never settle for. And that was a huge component for me when I started dating after. And it took me a while, so that's a whole nother subject in itself. It was about 3 years of healing, you know, and I learned a lot of things during that process where, you know, I would be with women, but I wouldn't commit to them. And I would tell them, and I thought that, this is a little off topic, but I'm going to answer your question. I thought that me being honest with them to say, listen, I just got a bad relationship. I'm not ready for commitment, but I want to act like it. Like, you know, I treated them good. I did the candle things, and we went out, and I would rub their feet. I mean, everything you've seen in a movie, romance, I did, but without the commitment. So I had multiple women. And because I was so hurt, I wanted people to feel that pain, but they didn't feel it in the way that it hurt them, but it did. Meaning, I would do what I want, and they knew that. And so they had a choice. Either you accept it or you didn't. And most of them, for the most part, accepted it. I've even had women months later say, you know what, I can't be with you because you're never going to commit to me, and this is not fair to me. And so I would be hurt that they would want to leave me. And so I would, of course, throw the charm on, and they would stay. But I didn't realize what I was doing to them until it happened to me, until a woman said to me, listen, I'm leaving. This is great what we have, but this happened before you, and so I'm not changing my plans for you. And so, of course, I thought I could persuade her with everything, whether it be sex, it be romance, it be poems, whatever I could do. And she left, and she stuck to her plan, and it broke me because I thought I was in love again, and here we are, square one. But it helped me to realize that I'm responsible for other people's feelings no matter what I say, because even though I tell them that I don't want a relationship and I think that that's doing a good thing, I slept with them. I put this in their head that there's a possibility of us being together, and I've done things that I know most of their previous relationships haven't happened. The men wasn't treating them like that. And so I was responsible for their feelings, even though I warned them. But my logic was I warned them so they knew better. But no, that's just not true. And so what I would tell people and what I do share is there's flags. There's always flags in the beginning. And so once I got over my BS within myself, I knew what I would never accept. I would never allow a woman to talk to me any kind of way and degrade me because I went through the things that you know, Johnny Depp's talking about now, where she called me, you know, fat POS and you're out of shape and you don't look how you used to and you're not working and you're this and anything degrading, she tried it. Luckily for me, my self-esteem has never been low, in at least in that type of department, so to speak. And so there's always red flags. So never accept something that you would not normally accept because you're going to get the red flags at first. And if you think you're in love, that's not love. So never, never settle for less. Keep it high and always want better for yourself and for the person that you're with because there's someone out there that will meet your criteria.
Yeah, I think
thank you for
hopefully
answering
that answers
question.
Your question. Sure.
No, I think you answered it beautifully, Michael. And like I can just relate. And I know Dr. Monica's got, you know, a number of experiences herself as well. But one of the things that you just shared, the piece about being responsible for other people's feelings. And so this was not an abusive relationship that I had. It was actually a really great friendship that I had. And similar to you, I, you know, gave the disclosures up front. Like, I'm not ready to commit. I'm not ready to be in a relationship. But we talked all the time. We shared things. It was, he truly was a dear, dear, dear friend, probably one of my best friends, and he would have gave his life for me without question. He would have done anything for me, moved across the country, it didn't matter. But because I wasn't ready, his heart still broke. And so he and I have talked since that time, and you know, I've apologized for the fact that he was hurt. But I say, I didn't, because he said, you broke my heart. And I said, I didn't break your heart. Yes, your heart broke, but I didn't break it. And I do think that while we have some accountability for people's feelings, I don't think that we have to take responsibility for them from the perspective that exactly what you just said. Don't settle. If it's not what you're looking for, wait for the person who will give you what you're looking for. Because I think that it still gets into a situation where somebody's trying to fix somebody. Somebody thinks if I do this, if I take you on this trip, if I do this, if I have sex with you the right way, if I all these things, then you'll capitulate. You'll, you know, kind of come over to my side, so to speak. And it doesn't always happen that way, and people do get hurt. But, you know, I think the point that you made about, you know, waiting 3 years, right? Giving it time, giving yourself time to breathe. But we just have to be careful in that dating process. I think that's really, really good advice. We have another caller, though, too. So let's connect with our next caller. Hey, caller. Thanks for calling in. This is Dr. Marcy on the V2V podcast. Did you have a question? Are you there, caller? Or are you just calling in to listen? Okay. All right, so they must have just called in to listen. But no, I think you answered it really, really, really well, and gave some sound sage advice. Will you talk a little bit about, you said she was hiding who she was and how she had a lot of background trauma and things like that that you didn't know about when you came into the relationship. So how do you feel like that stuff showed up? Because I think sometimes we look past who they were outside of the relationship, who they were for the relationship, because you said you were excited about it. Like you were cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs for her. And so then we just dive all in. How did you know, did you see any of it in the middle of the relationship and know that's where it came from, or did it all come after?
Yeah, so the beginning, like all relationships, it was great. And what was different for us is because we worked and, you know, initially we did not live together, but she had a roommate, a male roommate, and so I would go over there a lot. And shortly after, some incident happened. Of course, I have to be the boyfriend and save her. And like, yo, listen, you got to come live with me because we can't have this. And so I moved out. Now, I had two male roommates at the time. And so I consulted with them and let them know. And we were all friends anyway, and we all hung out together. So it was just great. And I say that she hid who she was because the true her really came out. And you know, you think this is almost 20 years later, that she's still the same way. And so the she didn't do the heavy drinking. There was no violence. There was no degrading. There was none of these characteristics of her, and they were hitting because she didn't show any of it during anything. You know, even if it was towards someone else, the aggression, there was no aggression. But I think, well, she never had kids before either. So a lot of that I put on the pregnancy, you know, her age, my age, both being in the service at the time. And so I was like, okay, you know, maybe this is just a combination, a recipe for this type of disaster. And maybe once the children come, you know, things change. And it didn't. It actually got worse because during the pregnancy, she didn't drink. But after, I mean, she just, I think it scared her, to be honest, because the partying, we didn't do any of that. You know, if we did it, we did it together. But it was just like, it was almost like a future jail sentence to say, okay, you know, in a year from now, you're going to jail and you're going to do 10 years. So you want to do everything you can before that sentence comes. And so, you know, looking back on it, you know, I feel like now that that's what she was doing. You know, she just, I think reality really hit her. It was like, this guy's trying to marry me. I have two children now. You know, we have a house. We have cars. This is all the stuff that I want. I just don't want it right now. And so This is all the stuff that she displayed to get away from it. But it was like, I want to play this now, but I want to play it later as well. It's kind of like having best of both worlds. Like, I want to be a wife sometimes, but I also want to play out in these streets too. So that's what I think, and why I say she hit it, because there was no signs of it at all. It was literally like a light switch. It changed almost overnight.
Yeah, I think that's a good observation. I think that's a really great assessment, that it was just maybe just a little bit too overwhelming. But I think our caller called back in. Maybe they just couldn't connect first. Let me see if we can get them. Thanks for calling in. This is V2V Podcast. This is Dr. Marcy. Did you have a question?
Actually, I do.
Awesome.
Can you hear
Go
me?
Ahead. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so I've listened and I've heard
Michael say that his mom was there present during, you know, a dispute that they had, or she, her tantrum or whatever she was having? Did you have any other outlet out there, like any friends, any people that you could talk to, you know, to tell what's going, say what's going on, you know, because that could be a lot to deal with. That could be very stressful. And I'm proud of you for doing what you did, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. So that's a great question. Here's something I learned. Me and my mom was, we used to be, I say used to, my mother has a lot of trauma. So my background really quick is, my mother's Black and Italian, and so she experienced a lot of things being the firstborn out of 12 children total. She experienced a lot of things, racism. She was raped. She was molested. There's a lot of trauma in her background. So me and my mother used to speak almost every day. And what I was doing was I was giving her play-by-play things that was going on in my relationship. And what I realized later is that my mom was protecting me, but it was tearing up my relationship too. And so, you know, the woman that I was with, her mother was a stripper or used to be or something to that. And so my mother would say, hey, listen, why don't you go swing on a pole like your mother used to? Now, that's terrible. Number one, I'm with this woman, so I feel a certain type of way. But my mother was adding fuel to the fire, but that was her way of protecting me. And so I'm giving you this backstory to tell you that at some point I realized it was causing turmoil in my relationship, and so I couldn't really talk to her anymore because she was using the information I was giving her to protect me, but it was really hurting me at the same time. So I had nobody to talk to, and that was the tough part. And then part of it is, how many people do I share this with to say, okay, this girl's kicking my butt, you know, who do I share that with? And then is it going to be used against me? Because if the relationship goes sour, people will bring that up. So it was just like, I judge people that's in my circle and look at it and say, who can handle the thing I'm about to give them? And if you've never been through that, then how could you really give me advice on it? And that's how I look at it. So at the end of the day, I really didn't have anyone that I could go to.
Okay. Understandable. Well, thank you for sharing your story. I really appreciate it, and I commend you for being a survivor.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in, caller. Appreciate that. And that was a great question. Thank you. So we are going to take a quick music break here. Give Michael a chance to breathe for a second, and we'll be right back.
This is love and war. All is fair, but to bring that up, to bring it here. And I used to think you wouldn't dare, but I never thought you wouldn't care. You refuse to let it go, then you refuse to let it grow. Girl, it's either now or then, when you choose, let me know. Cause I don't really wanna dwell. You say you forgive me, but every chance you get, you make me feel guilty. You know I hate it when you bring up the past. Why'd you come back? Is this really that bad?
Alright guys, we are back. This is the V2V podcast. I am your host, Dr. Marcy, and we are here tonight with our guest, Mr. Michael Valerio, who is sharing his story of what happens when she's the abuser. You're the guy, you're on the receiving end of it. The phone lines are open. We've had a couple of great callers with some great questions. That number is 914-219-0880. If you have a question for our guest, or if you have just a comment that you want to make, we would love to hear from you. I mentioned at the beginning that I was trying to find some statistics, and they're kind of buried in
the internet. Like, it's hard to dig out the information that truly reflects men. So I found one survey that was 16,000 people. It was like back in 2000. Half of them were men and half of them were women. So out of 8,000 men, 7.4% said that they had been abused. And I bring that statistic up because I know for sure that that's not an accurate representation, but we only, the statistics we have to go on are the statistics of people who disclose their abuse. Same thing with women. Do you think, Michael, that women have been conditioned and that society reinforces the idea that there's no consequences for abusing men, or that somehow, like, you're a man, you should just be able to take it? Don't be a punk.
I think it's a great combination of it. You know, if you look at it, just in my experience, you know, like I said, I've had cops come over. I even went to court. You know, the state put charges on me, and it was a female cop. And I only know that because of the paperwork when it came. I had no idea there was warrants out for me. You know, we're together, and I go to the mailbox, and boom, it's State of Virginia versus Michael Valerio, and I'm like, what is going on? And as I'm reading the report, it's saying that it's domestic violence. There's no report from her. There's no pictures of any, damage to her, any physical harm to her. She tore up the house. I left, and then the cops came, whether it be her who called the cops, which most likely it wasn't, it was neighbors. Within the first 3 months of us moving into that property, we was getting all kind of complaints because of the cops and the noise and the fighting. But needless to say, it was me against the state of Virginia. So, you know, I go to court, and they put on a stand. Even when both of our lawyers communicated prior to the judge hearing us, you know, my lawyer presented to the lawyer, and you know, he didn't do anything. She's like, well, I didn't press any charges, and I don't want any charges filed. The judge was still like, yeah, well, we're still going to proceed. He put on the stand. And so, you know, you look at that and they judge. People do judge. You look at the man, they look at a woman, depending on how they look, their size. It's never really portrayed that men win. I mean, you look at how society looks at different things, they will always be one-sided. There's not enough stories. And even if there was more men speaking out, how do you think they would look at this? They're going to be like, you know, they'll look at him and be like, oh, he's a sucker, or, you know, he's soft, or he could deal with it, or, you know, I would do this. But it's always what I would do if it was me, until it is you, and then what? So it's a very difficult situation to go through and then know what to do, and then have people believe what's actually going on and how you're going to be perceived and how that's going to affect your future. You know, this follows me. You know, will I get mocked? So it's a lot of different things, and it's really a tough situation.
Yeah, the guest that I had a couple weeks ago, he appeared anonymously on the show and shared his story, and that was one of the things he said. Matter of fact, he's going to come back and have that conversation about how that stuff follows you. And so maybe y'all can do the show together with me and really kind of talk about that. So, like, one of the things I've been asking myself all month long, so when I decided to have April be Men's Month, I just really wanted to hear from the guys, because women, we talk all the time. There's lots of outlets for us to talk. There's lots of outlets for us to share. There's lots of outlets for resources and, you know, the girl groups and the camaraderie and margarita nights and all that kind of stuff. But I've been asking myself all month as I talk to guys, and we've had guests on the show, where do y'all put this stuff emotionally? Well, where does it go? Because, you know, just the stuff you've shared tonight is super heavy stuff. Like, you reach out to the police and you end up going to jail. And that's not an uncommon thing. Like, one of my close friends, that very thing happened to him. He had scratches all over him. His shirt was torn, and they said, "Look, if you don't leave tonight, we're taking you to jail. Somebody's got to leave. We're not making her leave." So, where does all that go? If you don't feel like you can talk to anybody, and you can't reach out to the people that are supposed to help you because they're prejudging, where do you put that? What do you do with it? How do you process it? And I know you shared that you sought out some help and some therapy and things like that. So talk about that side of it for me, if you would, please. Are you there, Michael? Did I lose
you?
Yes,
can you hear me? No, I'm here.
Oh, now
can
I
hear
can
me?
Hear you. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, now I can, yeah.
I was saying the way I dealt with it was pretty vicious. This is the bad side of it. It was fair game, basically. It was who nobody was off limits. You know, I felt like they did this. So I took like the little cheating part. I say the little part because that was so minuscule to what the overall thing was. And I really took that and said, okay, well, somebody did this to me. I'm going to do it to everybody. And I did. I mean, I was rotating women like it was like changing underwears. And that's how I dealt with it. It was like, you know, now I'm going to just be a whore and I'm going to do whatever I want. And that way I can't get hurt because even though I'm emotionally bonded to them, but there's no, if they left, it wouldn't affect me. And so I basically shield my heart from anything and everyone. And so, you know, I just was like, yo, it's out here. You know, I let them know what's going on, what I'm doing. I'm not in a relationship. I live by myself. I do this, I do that. We can go out, we can have fun. There's no commitment. If she had a husband, it didn't matter. You know, she's a grown woman. She can make her own decision. You know, it just, there was no limits for me. There was no limits for anyone. If she was grown and she was willing, then we did it. And that's how I coped with it. And so I did that for 3 years until, you know, I got it all out. And I thought that was the best way, but it really wasn't. You know, it was just, that was just more pain and trying to deal with it. But that also because I never healed. I never had no one to speak to. I didn't know how to deal with that pain. And so I bottled it up. I tucked it away. And I just was like, you know, nobody's going to ever hurt me again. And so that's how I dealt with it. And to this day, there's pieces of that still lingering around. You know, I still have it in my mind where I can't allow anyone to hurt me, you know, nobody. My children are probably the only people walking this earth that could probably hurt me. And that's how I deal with it. So even now, even though I've moved past that and I've done all these great things in my life and was able to, you know, achieve things I never thought I could do, and even that, I still have that part that's just, it's cold, it's frozen. And so that's how I cope with it. But I never really had that therapeutic and release. This is probably the most I've ever really spoken about it, honestly. And it's not that I won't speak about it. I don't feel less of a man. It's just, it doesn't, you know, what you do is it doesn't really come up unless you're around people like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not around people like that. So it's not a dinner topic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I always say that domestic violence is a subject that nobody wants to talk about over crepes. Nobody wants to have cheesecake and domestic violence conversations.
You know, it's interesting, though, for me, it just, I would talk about it anytime. You know, we wake up Sunday morning and have pancakes and we talk about it. Flapjacks, you know.
Well, you know, you can call me anytime. I'm a listen, so you got somebody to talk to now. But I want to ask
it.
You though, because like you're a good looking brother, like you're successful, which we're going to talk about that too. Do you now? It's 20 years have passed, and you said like pieces of that still linger. Do you miss Do you miss relationships? Do you miss the idea of relationships? Or are you just, because I get it, because in a lot of ways you and I are very similar, from the standpoint of whatever's whatever, and kind of still have a little bit of that roadblock stuff. I still do some of that. But do you miss love?
Good question. It's a cute concept. I guess the idea of it, yes. But the reality is I just can't allow it. And that's just going to be the answer. I can't even think of a good reason why. I just can't allow it. I can't allow to be in that vulnerable state. You know, I look at other people, and I see, you know, just marriage. I just can't grab that concept. To me, I always say, people laugh, but it's a bad business deal. You know, I look at the type of women that is being groomed today. It's different. You know, these women, I think they've been traumatized for so long that they're worse than men now. You know, these women are just, they're about their money, and whatever they have to do to get it, they will do it. You know, women are having kids and walking away like, yo, where that paycheck at? You know, I had one. I have one of those. You know, my firstborn was a check, you know, and I don't have a relationship with my kid, my firstborn. You know, mom's just, she pounced, you know, and collecting a check. So, you know, it's just like, yo, I can't. Nah, I can't. I just can't allow it. And then, sadly enough, ideally, yes, I would love to be like that. You know, that married type of guy and have a nice, great wedding and do all the things that you see. I just don't know if I could do it. I can't say it's never. Anything is possible. But, you know, I was in my 20s. I'm going to be 41 in a few days, and my mentality is still... it's still the same. So there's hope. I think it's possible. For me at this point, no. I'm not ready for that.
Do you think, or have you ever considered maybe trying therapy, or it's just like, I'm good as is?
Good question. truly, it never crossed my mind. I never thought about that. Any therapy I had was due to my time in the military. We've talked about that, or childhood trauma. It never went to that. It really truly never crossed my mind. So, yeah, I don't know. It's something to consider now that it's brought up. I never thought about it, to be honest. Yeah, I just felt like I went through so much other worse things. That's nothing really, even though it's a huge part. But in my mind, there's so much other stuff that I've been through, that would be more of a topic for me to have multiple discussions with a therapist, rather than that.
Well, and the reason why I bring it up is because, you know, you mentioned that your mother was a victim of rape. She was a domestic violence survivor. She's got some mixed girl issues. All of that is the system you were born into. And so, you know, I don't know if you've seen me posting about my program called Challenge to Change, but that program really dives into that, those aspects. And so we look at your generational system. So that's, you know, the environment that you're born into. And so what do you learn inside that system? You know, what lessons did you learn from your mother on how she parented? What lessons did you learn from your father on how he parented? What lessons did you learn from, you know, aunts and uncles and, you know, associates and friends? And then when you get into adolescence, like what was your friend circle like? And so we take all of that, and what happens is, the information that we gather, that's called your cognitive learning period, right? So basically that's when your sensory development is happening. And so you're learning, what is my place in the world? What role do I serve? What can I expect from the world? What can I expect from people around me? And because your mother had a very toxic experience growing up, I don't know, other than the fact that how she manipulated her relationship with you to get information from you to use that against your ex, so that would free you up to continue to have a better relationship with her. Like, it's super jacked up, but it's not uncommon. And so your ex, she was a whole mess in and of herself, but I think when you've got all that toxic femininity surrounding you and that's really all you're seeing, there's a point where if you don't see another option, you stop looking for it. And so if you're not surrounded by women who can show you affection that doesn't have to be reciprocated in some sort of way, like they're not wanting something from you, they're not wanting money from you, they're not expecting anything from you, they're just loving you because you're Michael. And so you have to be open to that. And so there's an old saying that says, we attract what we are, not what we want. And so if that's the message that you give out, then that's what's being attracted to you. Does that make sense?
It does. Absolutely.
And so, having, and I don't know if it's therapy, if it's life coaching, whatever, but I think that because everything that you've talked about and everything that I've seen in the short time that I've known you, you seem to be a really good guy. And despite some of the choices that you made in dating, but they're understandable choices. So I would hate for you not to experience something that at one point you really, truly desired. Because you said, like, I never felt that way about anybody before. Like, I loved her, and I wanted the family, and I wanted the house and the picket fence, and, I wanted all of that. Where does that go? Like, how do you just not want that anymore? And so maybe you do, maybe you don't. I don't know the answer to that. Only you do. But just something to think about, I guess. Just something to kind of mull over in your downtime.
Yeah. Interesting. It just set some triggers. One thing I did find out, I was looking without knowing, but I was finding women that had a background like my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And so I realized that later. So I would start to date, and I would be really excited to tell my mother about the woman I was dating. And I recall now always saying, oh, she's just like you, here's XYZ, and why I think she's like you. And I realized after that particular one with all the drama and the abuse that's what I was doing. And I was like, holy crap, that's interesting that I figured that out on my own. But that was all I knew. There was no father, so it was a single mom raising me, and then I had a lot of aunts. But it's just, this is all I knew. And when I realized that what I was doing, then that's when I knew that the complete opposite of that would be where I would find success in a relationship. And so everything would be completely left from that. And that's why when the question came, what I advise for people to get out of those type of relationship, how would they find, in essence, a better relationship? It's never settling for things that you've previously settled for, and really raising the bar higher and asking the right questions and looking for those signs, because they're always there. And they're hitting at first, but they will come out. So it's just interesting to see that, with things that you say and the certain triggers that have me thinking about different things. But yeah, essentially I was finding those women that have really bad backgrounds, you know, there's trauma. And so that's never good.
Yeah, and to your point, we don't ask those questions. You know, that's not dating her questions. We're, you know, I'm trying to think who said it. I don't know if it was Steve Harvey or somebody I was listening to. I don't know, it was like a little blurb or something like that, maybe a TikTok video or something. But they were talking about how we have to have significant conversations. We have to have relevant conversations. And so people are out here in this dating world, and they're asking these really surface, very granular questions that don't really matter. Like, who gives a shit what your favorite color is? Nobody. Like, that doesn't matter. But asking questions like, what was your background like? Tell me about your childhood. Tell me about your parents. Like, the only way that some of this stuff is going to come up. And then what they were saying was, if you're in a situation and you're asking this individual those types of questions and they won't have the conversation with you, or they try and shun it away, or they either shut it down or make a joke out of it but don't want to dive into it, that's a red flag. Run, because there's something there, to your point, exactly what you just said. Like, eventually that stuff's going to come up. The question is, do you want to waste a whole bunch of time on the front end waiting for it to pop up, dating the representative, or do you want to get to the bottom of it in the first couple weeks? Personally, I think getting to the bottom of it the first couple of weeks sounds a lot more appealing than 6 months down the road. And, you know, at this point, y'all sleeping together, and they say, what, only three things come from sex, and that's babies, fillings, and STDs? Like, no, we're not trying to have any of that. Let's have these serious, you know, significant conversations in the forefront. But I digress. So I want to find out, because we talked about the voiceless part, I want to talk about the victorious part. And you're doing some amazing stuff with sharing financial information with people. And so talk about your successes. Like, you took all that pain, and it seems like you poured it into your accomplishments. So talk about some of that and what that process was like.
Sure. So I had to figure out what I was going to do. So from early in my childhood, I knew what I didn't want. And what I didn't want were the things that I was around. From Brooklyn, and, you know, we grew up poor, and, you know, there was just things that you could get into that I was into. And I knew that I just didn't want. I knew from an early age I wouldn't have a kid early. I knew I wasn't going to drop out of high school. And I knew I wasn't going to do drugs. But I knew these before I was a teenager. And so I stuck with those. And, you know, after this whole thing and getting out of the Navy, I didn't have guidance even in the Navy. So I finished up my tour in New Orleans, you know, during the Hurricane Katrina and that whole mess down there. Because we were so busy dealing with death and life and trying to help, and nobody had time for me. No one had 5 minutes to sit down with me and say, yo, what's your future look like? So I got out, and getting out, it was scary. I didn't know what to do. Trying to find a job, it was tough. Luckily for me, I had saved about $15,000, and, you know, I had that. And let me tell you, I blinked and that money was gone. To this day, I don't know where that money went. I think somebody took it out of the account, but it seems like it. Anyway,
you
so
did with your debit card.
Yeah. And so, you know, about 2012, I this is where everything started changing for me. So because I got out honorably, the post 9/11 bill came out, and they basically was paying for college, right? And it was different from the Chapter 33 bill where they give you a little bit of money. So I said, okay, what do I have to do to make my life better? I said, okay, I'm going to go to school. So I had it all mapped out. My son was just born. I just signed up for college, and I had a job offer to do cable infrastructure. And I did cable infrastructure right when I got out of high school. So I knew it paid decent. So that was $58,000 to start off. And so I went to school, and going to school, I got a stipend. So I was making about another $25,000 just for going to school, and they paid my education. Once I went in, I was going in for electrical engineering. After my first semester, I knew that that field would have a cap. And so I said, okay, I don't want that. And I switched my first semester and went into IT. Once I jumped into IT and I started learning about networks and security and things like that, I knew this was the future. I mean, it already was, but, you know, to me, this was something new. And so I started head first. And when I realized that the certifications meant more than the actual college degree, the degree for me was a personal goal. It was never for a career. It was never to get a job. But I knew that in the IT field, they didn't care about that degree anyway. But it was money for me, not only that they was paying me to go to school, but they were paying the college. So I went in, and let me tell you, if you ever seen Pursuit of Happiness and how hard Will Smith went portraying that guy to learn and all mm-hmm. the things that he was going through, I did that. So I drive to work. I would watch videos. If I had lunch, I didn't eat lunch. I ate the videos. If I took a shower, I'd set up the phone and listen to the videos. I went to sleep and listened to the videos. So I thought subconsciously I might be able to grab something. And so every minute free, there was no free time. And as I got into the IT field and I was really sharp with what I was doing, as I moved up, it became less color, right? There was no color as I moved up. So mm-hmm. I felt like I had to work harder. And so I started, I'll say, collecting certifications. And right now I have about 15 certifications. And so when I walk in a room, you know, I knew what I wanted, and it was nothing going to stop me. And so for every 6-7 months, I was changing my job. And so with that, I was getting $7,000 raises, $12,000 raises, $20,000 raises, $40,000 raises. I mean, it was just to the point where every 7 months, 8 months, I would give myself a raise. And once I figured out that this was key, there was just no stopping me. And so I moved into these tax brackets, and you know, now I'm paying salaries but taxes, right? You know, I owe $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in taxes. It's like, damn, well, how do people that owe this, how do they deal with it? So I started reading everything that I could really get my hands on, and watching YouTube videos and saying, what do I do? I even Googled, what do I do with this money? What do I do with $30,000? And so there's no answer, by the way. You don't do that. You won't get a good answer. it didn't work out well. And so I just was like, okay, taxes, I got to pay taxes, but how do rich people do it? And so I started reading the IRS publication. I mean, it's not the most entertaining thing, but, you know, I really was hooked into how to beat this game, how to play the game, right? Because it is a game, and we're not taught that. So I started with the foundation. What is money? What do we do with it? What are we supposed to do with it? What is credit? What are we supposed to do with it? How do I master this? How do I fix this? And so I got my credit score up, you know, to a 780. And I started helping people, because if you can teach it, that means you know it. And so I would teach everything that I learned, because it kept me sharp in doing that. So I've helped over 15 to 20 people in the IT field. You know, I've helped people make, you know, just recently, last week, got a guy hired I used to work with. You know, he's making $105 an hour. You know, this is insane amount of money in the IT field, and degrees are not needed. And so when I figured out credit and how to master that, money, what is money and how to budget and what to do with it, don't let it sit dormant in your bank, right? Because it's not made to do that. It's made to move, which is why money in the bank doesn't sit in the bank, right? They take it, they loan it out and make money with your money. And so college is a scam, unless you you know, need the degree, to doctor, lawyer, things that are specific and you need to have that degree. But I believe college is a scam, and there's a way to utilize certain skill sets and work for companies and allow them to pay for your college. And so there's always a hack to everything. And so I wanted to figure out, what are the hacks? What are the loopholes? And so I just reading and watching videos, and again, teaching it, practicing, seeing what works, what doesn't work. I've invested in all kind of things. I've had vending machines. I've invested in a house in Atlanta. That was a total loss, but I had the experience. I've done it all. I've invested in Fire Sticks. I've sold DVDs. I've done everything. Hustle is what I do. And, you know, whether I'm worth the $10 or $100 million, I don't think the hustle in me will ever stop. And so I have to give it back. And you know, one of the greatest things I think I've done is taught my 7-year-old what taxes is. You know, he runs around and he's telling people, yo, you don't have stocks? Yo, that's crazy. Why you don't have stocks? And, you know, what LLC entity do you have? You know, this guy's 7 years old, and he's asking grown fee people, you know, what tax structure they have and why they should have an S-corp versus, you know, a sole prop. And so that's great that and seeing him learn that let me know that children can learn it and not be bored with it. But they don't teach this information. This is not taught in school. Mm-hmm. This is not taught in colleges. You know, this is stuff that, and if it is, it's almost too late, right? You got to break bad habits. And so we don't learn this. Our parents don't know it. You know, the get a job and work 50 years, that was back in the day. That doesn't work now. Companies don't sponsor people the way they did back then. And so all of this information, mm-hmm. I'm constantly just pumping out because we have to do better. The children, you know, we have to do more for our children so they can now start pushing this information to their children, because the country's not going to do it for us. The government is not going to change the curriculum. Look at the school system. They're still teaching old bad information. You know, it's a waste. So, you know, with all this information that I'm learning, I'm hooked into it. It's like a matrix. So, you know, it's exciting for me to read the IRS new tax law, as geeked out as that sounds. But the end result of me, you know, saving $20,000-$30,000, I owed 40-something thousand this year. Well, I only paid 24, which next year I'll probably end up paying less and making more. And so we all can do that. And people don't even understand or know that even though you're W-2, you can start writing off business taxes even without generating any income. And so I want to share that word and continue to push it out. There's a lot of fake gurus out there that's just sucking the poor. The poor are the biggest spenders. And if you look at statistics, where all that money's coming from, it's coming from the poor communities. And they keep it that way. It's systematically designed to, I mean, you just look at the stores, look at the type of people that are in poor communities. It's all designed that way, and it works. And so we have to be educated enough to know and identify these things and get out of that.
Absolutely. Maybe we need to have you come back on and do a financial show. I used to be a banker, so I love that you're passionate about finance and all that kind of stuff, and you know all the, like, stock stuff, which that's never been my jam. So maybe that will be a part two for Mr. Michael to come on for V2P.
Let's do it.
So, that sounds good to me. So we got about just over a minute left, guys. So thank you for tuning in tonight. For those individuals who called in, thank you so much. Michael, I appreciate your transparency. I appreciate your vulnerability. I know this is not your thing to talk about this kind of stuff, but from the minute I asked you, you're like, let's do it. Let's do it. I'm okay. And I truly appreciate it. So that's it for us tonight, guys. This is the V2V podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Marcy. You can catch the replay at 9seconds.org/. There's also a form on there if you want to drop your information. Maybe you want to come on the show, share your story. We welcome it. But in the meantime and in between times, I hope that you all stay healthy, stay safe, and reach for the stars. So until we link up next here on the V2V podcast, that's it for us tonight. Mr. Michael, thank you again. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
All right, y'all. We'll catch y'all next week here on V2V.
Take care. Good night.